This week, Rob writes a check to Rick Santorum's campaign. Jeremy retweets George Zimmerman's phone number, and Jerry just shakes his head in disbelief. Welcome to the Midwest peace process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen,
ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest peace process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest peace
to remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome. Now. It's Call It the Process. This is episode 26. Today is April 11th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Thank you so much for taking your time to listen. We certainly appreciate it. Hey, there's an interesting thread going on right now about episode 21, where we talked about schools brainwashing our kids. So you should go check that out in the forum. That's forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com and add your voice to the conversation. Or you could just send us an email and tell us we're full of it. Feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com. You can comment on our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter. We are a freaking media empire. So, what have we got to cover this week, Jeremy?
Probably should talk about Santorum dropping out of the race.
Yeah, that's Aww. A big disappointment, isn't it?
So sad.
That is not a disappointment to me.
That was the shortest second half. Remember, it was halftime?
Yeah, right.
What happened to the second half?
Yeah.
Well, when you're getting beat soundly, you know, you don't even bother using your timeouts, so the clock just keeps running. It seems to go a lot faster.
Yeah.
You run the ball even though you're behind.
Yeah. Yep.
You just took a knee.
I think he is still supposed to speak at the NRA convention this weekend here in St. Louis.
I remember reading that. I think you're right.
Angry, disgruntled guys with guns. Sign me up.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the NRA.
Why not?
They're way too willing to compromise, and
I was going to say they aren't radical enough.
Yeah, that's about what it boils down to.
Are you guys being serious?
Yeah, I think a lot of the gun control legislation that we have right now was written by NRA lawyers, and you know they write it They meet the opposition halfway and they write the law, you know, in that middle ground, and they say, okay, this we will agree to this. This is what, you know, this is what our people in Congress will vote for. Are you okay with this? And the other side said, yep, sure, we're okay with that, and away we go. And I just, you know.
How about that? I don't think I've ever heard that argument that the NRA is too flexible.
Yeah, if you want to donate money to an organization that actually protects your Second Amendment rights, I would suggest the JPFO, and I'll put a link in the show notes to them.
I think I've heard of them.
That would be the Jews for the Protection of Firearm Ownership. So I'll give them a plug.
There you go. So what about this election then? You guys sad that the true conservative has dropped out of the race? Not sad.
No, not sad. I think he was bad news. I don't know if I have much more to say about Santorum other than his assault on liberty and that he's been quoted. He's said it. There are recordings of him saying people believe the federal government shouldn't be in their lives, and that's wrong. I don't know how he got as far as he did.
Don't you believe that a Rick Santorum presidency would essentially become a theocracy? The separation between church and state would just be thrown out the window?
As much as it could in 4 years' time.
It just seems like he's a fundamentalist, and he's not afraid to admit that he's a fundamentalist, you know?
Right. And for me, it's interesting what various persuasions' fears are, because I think a right-wing fear is the liberal, educated, elitist, millionaire trial lawyer mindset, whatever that is. And for me, I do fear like a political leader that pretty much only answers to literal interpretations of ancient texts and what their preacher says.
Right.
You know, I don't mind people with a little bit of a religious bent. That doesn't really bother me. But I mean, I know evangelicals that will act completely irrationally and make completely irrational decisions, and will tell you that this decision is completely irrational. But they say that's the proper thing because that's what the Bible says. So I don't really want that guy with the finger on the button, you know, with an apocalyptic, you know, death wish.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you're an end timer, you know, there's a lot, like maybe that's really what I'm speaking about in the most extreme cases. But there are a lot of people that are just can't wait for the rapture to come, and there's a lot of stuff, pretty bad sort of stuff, that needs to happen before the rapture appears. And
right.
And if you can help bring the second coming, then you're doing a good thing. And
right. Usher them in.
That's right. I don't want that guy popping the nuke.
Rob, do you have any examples of people who have of decisions someone has made and they admitted that it was completely irrational? I don't understand that. I can't imagine. Is it on? I mean, I assume it's on fairly important things that they're saying. That. It's not like whether to buy wheat or white bread.
I'll give you a silly example that's almost as good as wheat and white bread. Was there are diet crazes around that market themselves to evangelical Christians. And the marketing goes that, like, not only the marketing but the reasoning is that you should eat what Jesus ate during his time because that's what Jesus ate. And I've also heard, well, they lived longer back then because they were more healthy. So what?
No,
yes.
No, they didn't.
but it doesn't matter. See, that's where your factual mindset is getting in the way. Because isn't that a nice idea? Isn't it a nice idea to eat like Jesus ate?
Yeah.
You know, it feels good.
Lousy. Holy cow.
But people don't want you're mixing up your facts with your heart.
Now, let's not confuse the issue with the facts. Yeah.
Right. Right. Because it feels right. It feels right. I also know someone who doesn't donate their organs because Jesus didn't do that.
Well, the transplant surgeons didn't live around Nazareth back then.
So right.
All in different. What in the hell?
So you see what I'm saying, though, that they're,
yeah.
Those are pretty erratic. I mean, and it's not like these people don't understand basic history or medicine. It's a compulsive urge to be what they think is closest to the way Jesus was.
Yeah, no, I get it. I just
I think the left had a lot of freaking out about W, you know, when it came to things on the Israel policy and that sort of thing. I think it was a little overblown. But he's got some rapture whisperers in that dude's ear, and
yeah.
You know, we're talking about Palestine and starting off the, you know, popping off some conflict out there, you know, your Mother Joneses are going to freak out. I never really got into that too much, but yeah. So all right. So back to Santorum, you know, it makes me worry. It does make me worry, but I don't know. I don't mind that.
At least he was upfront about it. That's who he was. So he didn't try to hide it and sneak in there. And in fact, it was almost like he was trying to ride that into the White House, thinking, well, this will really energize some people. But I don't.
Well, he was trying to capture that percentage of the, you know, the Republican right, or the religious right, I should say, that distancing themselves from Romney.
Right.
And I don't think that percentage was all that high.
Yeah, I don't think it's enough.
No,
obviously
by itself, it's certainly not enough. But
what if you didn't have a Gingrich or a Paul? Would it have been enough?
No,
I don't think so.
I don't think those three are competing for the same people at all. I don't think there's any overlap. I mean, so, there might be a few Ron Paul supporters who would, you know, throw their support behind Santorum if, you know, if Paul had dropped out and Santorum was the only other candidate. You might get something like that to happen, but no, I don't think there's much overlap there.
So I mean, it's going to be game on the general, but maybe we should wrap this little primary up a little bit and just ask the question, what the heck happened here? Like what went on? I mean, I know there's a Marco Rubio quote, you know, as he's trying to give it his endorsement and mentioning that there were people that could have run, but they didn't want to run. Like, was it just a bad field? If Obama, I mean, all we hear from the right is how weak and worthless the dude is. So why is he so hard to beat? You know, I mean, why wasn't it everyone clamoring at the gate to go up against this dude? Like, is he hard to beat? Is he easy to beat? Why didn't anybody show up? Is this the best we got? What is it from a not democratic perspective?
Well, I'll say this, that, and I'll put my conspiracy hat on here briefly.
Oh, wear it.
And I'll say that, you know, Ron Paul would make a much better candidate than Romney. He was fighting an uphill battle from day one, though, because the media doesn't like Ron Paul. So they were not giving him the coverage, equal coverage. And
why don't they give him the coverage? Because of who owns the media? The money driving the media?
Well, yeah. Name your theory there. I don't pretend to understand that. But, you know, the Daily Show pointed this out on numerous occasions that Ron Paul was not getting any love from the media. And, you know, if the Daily Show's picking up on something like that, it's got to be legitimate. But I think the other thing, to be perfectly honest, Ron Paul is not a dynamic speaker.
No,
right.
I mean, he has that working against him in most cases. You know, the debates, when he would stray away from his rehearsed talking points, he stumbled a lot. And, you know, I don't think he was a strong performer, generally speaking, in the debates. But I don't think Romney's that hard to beat, really. I think it was generally a weak field.
No, I mean Obama. Is Obama hard to beat?
Oh.
Like, he shouldn't be.
Was there reluctance for top quality Republican talent to get in the race because they were afraid of facing him? Cuz it seems like what's the stated reason why the field was so weak?
I have no idea.
All right. I think it's a pecking order kind of a thing.
It's everybody takes their turn.
Yeah.
And now like it's Mitt's turn and
yeah, they've been talking about Romney for as long as I can remember, and this was finally his shot. What some would consider an easy election. So,
yeah, that's a theory. But I would expect if you're a real, I don't know who was the most, you know, who was the Indiana governor guy, Mitch Daniels, right? You know, he was in there. He seemed like a solid dude. If you really thought you could do it. I mean, if you weren't afraid of Obama, you wouldn't be afraid of beating Romney.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anybody's shuddering in their boots to, you know, beat him in a primary.
You know, there is so much going on behind the scenes that we don't have any sort of visibility into. And I'll just, you know, I'll use a story that came out today about the GOP caucuses here in the state of Missouri. They had to abort them last month when they had originally scheduled them because it was just completely disorganized and it degenerated into a shouting match and a couple people were arrested, you know. So they said, okay, we're going to reschedule it. We're going to have a do-over in April. Well, they just had that, what, last night?
Tuesday, yeah.
And Ron Paul won, okay? And I'm citing that as an example of sort of the machinations that go on within the Republican Party that most people never see. You know, we don't get to see how that sausage is made usually, but in this particular case we did, and it was, you know, it was ugly and it was all over the newspapers, and I have to extrapolate from that that, you know, these sort of backroom deals are going on in every county, in every state, all across the country, and the party itself, the party leadership at a national level, wields an unreasonable amount of power over selecting, you know, who the candidates are going to be. And I think that it's those backroom deals, you know, the smoke-filled rooms with these GOP fat cats sitting there deciding who's going to run, who's going to be a viable candidate, and it really doesn't matter who the people vote for or who shows up to a caucus, because I think those decisions have largely been made. And, you know, so your strong candidates, like you said, for one reason or another. I mean, take Bobby Jindal. He was a rising star in the Republican Party, right? I mean, they were talking about him as a presidential candidate in the future, in the near future. You know, I remember him saying that he might be running in the next election. I haven't heard anything about him.
It was ever since he gave that State of the Union rebuttal speech.
Well, I'm just saying, it's the party that decides whose star is rising and whose isn't.
Sure.
And,
okay.
And it was McCain's star. I wouldn't say his was ever rising, but I think, you know, he'd been around long enough and had, you know, had enough influence within the party that they said, all right, we'll give him a shot and we'll see what happens. And, of course, he flamed out. So, you know, they said, okay, Mitt, you're up next. Your bet.
So is it unique to the Republicans? I mean, it sounds like it.
No, I don't think so. I think that's just politics.
Yeah.
But how did Obama beat Hillary? How did he even get close? I mean, there's no more machine than the Clinton machine. And Obama's just a little punk kid. So how did, like, what happened there? How did it work for him?
I'm not sure.
I mean, if Obama could beat the Hillary machine, why couldn't anybody, any other rising Republican do anything against the mittens?
There's too many variables in those equations that we don't know about.
But I don't think you could say it's impossible for, like, a dark horse candidate to come through.
I don't know. I don't know if that's possible anymore.
Did you don't think that Obama was one of those?
No.
I don't think so. He was
you thought he was kind of anointed.
Darling
as well.
of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
But not the same as a Hillary.
I don't know.
You think people like Clinton?
I think
Bill was the darling of the party. Hillary has just always been, you know, it's accessory to Bill's career.
Right. Yeah, I never really understood
his stock. Even his stock seemed to fade while Hillary was running.
Right.
Yeah.
I never understood the Hillary love. You know, I could understand why people really got into Bill. If that's kind of your thing. Monica liked it. yes. But yeah, I never understood why. Yeah, people would get fired up about a Hillary. I didn't really quite got that. But yeah, I guess I disagree. I think there is it's just to me it's such a surprise of how things have gone from the total energy of the Tea Party movement through the whole healthcare thing, and you have you know messages that are just hitting home from that side that had energy and mobilization and people were throwing money at problems and everything was fired up and Obama's going in the tank and this guy's easy to beat and all he is a teleprompter. I thought it would be like a mad rush at the door, a top talent. Hey man, this is my chance.
Yeah.
And then it just didn't happen like that.
Right. And then
and I don't know who's sitting out or what judgments that they've seen. You know, I don't know if they think Obama really is, you know, tough to beat or unbeatable or.
I think he's tough to beat because of the rules of engagement that you have to use when running against Obama. You can't run against him like you can any other candidates.
Why not? Like what?
I think
because he's the president, or
no. I think
it is harder. Okay.
I think it's a race thing, and you can call me out for bringing that up, but tell me there were areas where he could have been attacked that he was not attacked because the rumblings were, well, that's a racist attack. Well, so you'd have to back away from it.
What?
Tell me I'm making that up.
No, I think you're right, but I think it cuts both ways. I think he's been judged more harshly, maybe.
By whom? Not the media.
Well, by his opponents, and not necessarily mainstream opponents. But I just remember thinking when he got elected, first of all, I was happy that he got elected because I think, you know, it was about time that we end this parade of old white guys for, you know, for president. We were due. But at the same time, I remember thinking, well, you know what? You're going to have to do this job twice as good as any of your predecessors in order to,
right,
you know, have the same level of approval.
Right.
And, you know, that's because...
I don't know. I don't totally agree with that. So level of approval by the proverbial old white guys. Yes, I'll agree with that. But...
Well,
by
that you'd ever get
most other people, then no, I don't agree. I think it would be somewhat not given a pass, but given a, well, hey, you know, he's being judged more harshly, so let's take it easy.
Fascinating. Yeah, I don't see that. I mean, I think if you have an attack on the guy, if you have a well-founded attack, just go ahead and fire it out there. You know, if it's racist, well, it's probably not a well-founded attack. I mean, what
but
I
it's
think
not,
is,
it's not racist. It's somebody saying it's racist, so it immediately shuts it down.
Yeah, right. So
I'm not saying they were actually racist attacks against him. I'm saying somebody would bring a point up and they would say, oh, that's racist.
And then you don't have to respond to it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. But isn't that just a... Is it nothing more than just a tactic?
I'm not sure that all issues would be open to that sort of deflection. I mean, you know, you can't really say, hey, Obama, you didn't close Guantanamo. What's up with that? Well, that's racist. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So I agree with you, Jeremy. There's some issues that they could play the race card on, but I don't think that's true for everything.
No, I don't. I'm not saying it's everything. I'm saying there's an aspect there,
yeah,
that makes it more difficult to run against a candidate who should be easy to beat.
Well, yeah, wow.
Given
I don't
those,
see that.
Oh my,
I mean,
gosh!
I guess I don't see it. I don't remember. I'm having trouble squaring that against a traditional kind of right wing charge against the guy, which is what that he's.
Okay, let's talk about
that. He's a radical social. Right. He's a radical elitist socialist out of touch with the people that, with a grand plan of destroying the nation and doesn't know what he's doing and needs a teleprompter.
Right.
Like, why do you, if it's all of that, like, why is a possible, ooh, you know, this is going to be perceived as racial? Like, why would that even factor in there? Like, I don't, and it also goes to the other kind of contradiction out there of basically the guy. At the same time, evil mastermind of the world and total buffoon. You know, he's got to be one or the other. That's a separate topic. But yeah, how can it be? How can he be so awful? How can he be so bad? And then and having his race like just trump everything.
What? Wait, say that again. Having his race trump everything.
Right. Why
that's,
is that?
I don't
that,
think
why
that's
is
what
that,
I said.
Why is it such a major factor, though?
I'm not saying it's a major, I'm saying it's enough of a factor that it makes him more difficult to beat than he should be.
Okay. It's
because it takes away certain angles.
So if Obama was white, then all the normal attacks would have their normal level of effectiveness.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
But he's not. So there are certain things that are off limits. As a result.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's a plus.
That's a really short list, but I do agree with you. I think that's probably true.
Oh, that was exhausting.
Well, okay, so since we're talking all this racist topics, let's touch briefly here on our topic from last episode. We discussed Trayvon Martin's death and the perpetrator, George Zimmerman, and breaking news this afternoon was that he's been charged with second-degree murder and will be appearing, I guess, tomorrow in a hearing.
So, seems like a good thing. I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, why not just charge the guy? Isn't that the safest kind of option here?
That's what I said to Jerry earlier, but that should not be how these things play out. It should be based on the evidence.
But then who? Yeah, in a court. Otherwise, who's making that decision? Who's deciding whether?
Well, you know,
No. There has to be a decision made whether to charge somebody first, and that doesn't happen in court.
So are you saying the prosecutor might have just buckled to the public pressure to charge him, even though he doesn't think he can win?
Jerry, she said, we do not prosecute by public pressure or by petition, even though I disagree with that statement.
Okay, well, prosecutors have to worry about their reputation just like everybody else. So I think there's quite a bit of incentive there for them to not take on cases they think they're going to lose, right? I mean,
right.
Regardless of public pressure, you know, at some point that individual has to consider their own career path and, you know, a high profile case like this and you take it to court and lose, that's not going to look good on your resume. So,
but does it look worse to not take this case to court?
I don't know. I mean,
I think you're you're the prosecutor who didn't even bother taking this to court.
Yeah. Well, I
guess, are you out of your mind?
I guess it depends on whether or not, you know, your name becomes a household name like Marcia Clark or
Marcia Clark. And yeah,
didn't work out so well for her. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was thinking. And that was where I kind of felt like the Trayvon family, you know, had kind of had the upper hand there. It's like, why not send it to court? You know, it seems to me dicey enough. I mean, it doesn't seem to me clear cut, and I don't even follow the darn thing.
Right.
So it seems like better to give it a shot.
Okay, but now looking at it from the other side, this Zimmerman guy now has to either have a public defender, or if he wants, not to disparage public defenders, but if he wants
to not go to
the equivalent of OJ's defense, then he's financially ruined. He's going to be financially ruined.
Yeah.
But the neighborhood association dues will pay his.
Sorry, folks. Can't get that new swimming pool this year. We got to bail out Zimmerman.
Yeah. Because he was doing this in the performance of his official duties.
That's right. Sounds good to me.
Coon.
Oh, my gosh.
Who said that?
I heard it. I whispered it. Well, I don't know.
One
way or another, there are going to be riots eventually.
You think?
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to stand by my prediction from last episode. I think it's going to be the L.A. riots all over again in Florida.
That's interesting. So, well, what are you saying? Either way?
No, I think he'll be acquitted.
Definitely be riots if he's acquitted. If he's not, maybe it'll be the equivalent of winning some kind of sports championship.
The sentence won't be severe enough. You know, he'll get 10 years instead of life or something. Well, interesting. We'll see how that plays out. We will keep an eye on it and not spend too much time talking about it, hopefully. But it is an interesting case, so we'll see where it goes.
Well, and one thing I was thinking about the OJ trial that I kind of miss is remember it brought the country together. It didn't really bring the country together, but at least we were all talking about the same thing. Because can't we all just get along? Kind of happened
right
when it all started, right? Because everybody was watching.
Yeah,
and I always wonder as a child of that era, in our crazy modern times, whether we'll have kind of a not a unifying experience, that's way the wrong way to phrase it, but a common experience like that again. You know, when everybody knew the white Bronco going down the street, and if it doesn't fit, you must quit. And,
right.
I mean, it was whereas now we're much more fractured. I mean, people are listening to our goofy podcast instead of watching CBS News like they should.
Yeah, but the big case is still Casey Anthony last summer. People were all over that thing. That was different set of circumstances, but similar level of coverage to the OJ trial, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I don't see it because I didn't get into the Casey Anthony thing. But
yeah, that was definitely a circus.
And Nancy Grace needs to go away.
Oh, yeah. She should be banned from television.
Oh, what a...
Right. She trades on it.
Yeah, she does. That's what's really sad. She's basically exploiting all of these missing child stories and child abuse stories, and I don't know. I don't have a
very... Is she an ex-prosecutor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay, so we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about listener feedback. We got a little bit we need to cover here from last week. And then, I don't know, we'll see what else we got to talk about. So stay with us. Come back because we got started on this subject and now we got to finish it. One of our listeners provided us a link to an update on a story we covered last episode about the waitress who was given the $12,000 tip and then their local police took it away from her, claiming it was drug money. And Rob says that government works for you because in the end she got the money.
wrong.
Case
government
closed.
Does not work.
Podcast over.
Labeled this topic, or I listed this topic for last week. We never really touched on it. We talked so much about peripherals that the power of public opinion and stories like this getting out are driving local, federal, whoever, whatever agency to make decisions that they otherwise would not. It's the Trayvon Martin case. They're saying they don't bow to public pressure. Well, yes, they did. This case with the money, it became a news story. So, okay, well, here you go. You can have the money now.
Let me read this quote here. Moorhead Police Lieutenant Tori Jacobson said that from the moment Knutson's lawsuit became national news this week, quote, everyone in this department was getting unbelievable numbers of phone calls, blasting us, even wishing me and my family would die.
I don't agree with that, but it is, I don't know if it goes to prove how poor that law is, how poor their decision-making was to confiscate the money, or if it shows how weak humans are and that we just don't want to deal with minutia and saying, okay, fine, you know, I'm tired of these phone calls, here, take the stupid money. If it truly was drug money, then follow the law. And if it was not, and if they were doing something shady and now they realize, well, we got caught, we better give it back, then something should be done about that.
Yeah. Well, here's he goes on to say, we knew public opinion would not be in our favor and we got some black eyes, but we think this result is awesome. It's wonderful for her. County Attorney Michelle Lawson said that in order to calm the chaos and let the police department get back to business, she asked a judge to authorize the department to release the cash immediately. Quote, unfortunately, this came across as a case of government corruption, but it's really a story about a citizen doing the right thing and the police doing the right thing.
Oh, once they got caught.
Nice reframe there. That's extra credit right there.
Yeah.
It's along the lines of the fake apologies too. Once people apologizing once they get caught, or apologizing because people are saying you need to apologize, you screwed up and you need to apologize, and their apology wasn't enough. Okay, well they need to be fired then. Okay, we got to fire them. It's disingenuous the way things happen. And that is a real problem to me.
Don't you feel in your life in general and your more cynical moments that you should probably spend about, much less time doing anything good and a lot more time on your own personal PR? I mean, isn't that going to be the skills of the future? Because what got her the $12,000? It was public relations and a story that got her the $12,000. If there was no drudge, if there was no big story, she's out in the real world. So I mean, sometimes I think all that really matters is your own portrayal of your own self-image. Maybe I'll start as a business. I mean businesses have consultants to design their logos and target market to consumers. Like I'll start a business where I'll sell that service to people, and you'll have your own kind of public relations. That's a good idea.
It's not just drudge. So
easy on the drudge. I just mean that it's nothing but that
it's news.
Maybe in our modern world that character doesn't really matter. Maybe it's perception of character that is all that matters. And maybe that perception could be bought. Because if it could be bought, I'm selling it and I'm going to be rich.
It can and it is. And we don't know much about this waitress. She could have been, well, she held the same waitressing job for 17 years. So that's admirable, I guess. So, maybe her character is unimpeachable. I don't know. We don't know who she was. But there you go, Rob. There's an example of character assassination not entering the picture.
That's good. That's good. Heartened.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Just. I was gonna equate what Rob was saying to the Jayco report or Elliot Davis on your side. Those kind of stories.
Yeah.
I think I have a story. I think it was Elliot Davis. It happened to a friend of mine who was an apartment manager, and he went after her on behalf of this guy who died in his apartment. Long story. The guys, it was definitely a one-sided deal where they were prosecuting an agenda. And Rob, what you're saying is true. And it is becoming more about perception.
It's interesting. And then how you play the media and if you're playing the right media. I think Elliot Davis is going to take the side that he thinks is going to gain him the most viewers, right? Yes. Whatever is the easiest to present as someone to root for. He doesn't want to be on your side of this total a-hole. That's not a good segment.
And that was another point I had last week that we didn't really get to because discussion didn't go that way, but the media doesn't make money by reporting facts. They make money by getting viewers.
Right.
And what
free market, baby.
What responsibility do they have, or what liability do they have if they're reporting not recording, reporting, and the way they skew a story causes some kind of action, whether it's a riot or something equivalent, some type of damage. What liability do they have? They should be liable if they're not reporting things factually. Should they not?
Well, good question. Answer that yourself.
Yeah, they should.
Right, but what? nailed it. But what does the free market say? What is should? Who's going to enforce that should? Some on this podcast would say that it's the only one who can regulate that stuff is the consumer and what they want to see, that the almighty consumer will always choose the right thing.
They will not always go choose the right thing. No. But it does go back to the public outcry thing.
They won't, but it's possible there are other watchdog organizations out there that will.
Right. So
the consumer just needs to know about them and try to be informed.
What do you guys think of ProPublica? You know who they are?
Yeah.
I don't.
I think...
Who are they? Tell me.
I think they're a non-profit organization that aren't really affiliated with any news or organization at all. And I think they get some money from somewhere. I don't really know how the financing works. But I guess they've gotten these hotshot investigative journalists that used to work for the big papers. They can't pay them anymore. And they all got together and they choose stories and they hound on people for a long time and get all the things that you wouldn't get, that you used to get out of the big papers that you don't get anymore. And then I believe they sell those services to the papers. It's like it's a brand new marketing model. But it's an interesting thing because they're like, anytime you see something from them, it tends to be pretty good. And consumers, I think, are going to start being drawn to that brand, even though it's not a brand like a newspaper, it's really a group because the newspapers aren't making any money. So yeah, did I get that right, Jerry?
Yeah, that's basically what they are. They are a nonprofit. They're basically shopping their stories around to other media.
Right, it's a good thing. It seems like it's working.
And they've won Pulitzer Prizes here in recent years for some of their reporting.
How does that compare to the Associated Press?
Well, the difference is in the Associated Press, any news organization that's a member pays dues, and it's the dues they pay that cover the cost of the reporters who are sent, you know, around the world on location, whatever.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, ProPublica is self-funded through donations.
Yeah, and it works.
Cool. Okay, so we got some feedback from a few listeners, actually. One new fan on Facebook just wrote, "You're a genius," on our Facebook page.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I'm not
sure I do what I can.
This is a genius, but thank you to that listener. Her name is Kim. I also got some face-to-face feedback from one of our listeners, and he said he
was... That could be dangerous.
No, yeah, it
didn't turn into a Trayvon Martin case, did it?
It didn't. I didn't have
to. Oh, man.
I didn't have to draw down on him. he said he was listening to episode 25 today at work and enjoyed it a lot. So I told him to send us some, you know, comments or whatever via email. So maybe he'll do that. His name's Jordan. And our old friend Nathan sent us some comments about last episode. He says, Jerry placed the responsibility for what happened squarely on Mr. Zimmerman. We're talking about the Trayvon Martin case again here. To be fair to Mr. Zimmerman, or at least fair to the truth, we don't know what happened after he got off the phone with 911. In at least one scenario discussed on NPR, perhaps Mr. Zimmerman did stand down at that point. I don't think we know if something else happened after that, perhaps something initiated by Trayvon that escalated the situation. Okay, that's fair. And he's right. We don't know what happened. And I would certainly agree that, you know, if there was something initiated by Trayvon Martin after that, then, you know, he was well within his rights to defend himself. But I don't know, at this point, since Martin's dead, it's basically Zimmerman's word against whatever witnesses they might be able to dig up. Yeah, I don't see that this trial is going to be a slam dunk for anybody. I think it's going to be messy. But Nathan says, Rob said, what's going to happen? I'll say he gets off and it causes a whole poo storm. Jerry purposely misheard what Rob said as poo storm. However, I hired some Fox News audio engineers, analyzed liberal bias diatribe, and these independent truth gatherers came to the peer-reviewed, indisputable conclusion that his actual words were coon storm. Fox engineers sent me this link.
Coon.
It was very clear to me that from the context that this is exactly what he said. Shame.
Is there some kind of listener feedback award we can give?
Yeah. Thank you, Nathan, for going the extra mile on that.
Yes, indeed.
He also comments on the Stand Your Ground law, and he said, again, on Rob's comment, you can go up to somebody, get into a beef. Oh, I got my gun. I feel threatened. Pow! Over. That's not how...
Sounded like me.
That's not how it works. The idea of stand your ground has always required that the person using the defense to not have provoked the confrontation. So according to Florida law, if George Zimmerman had provoked Trayvon Martin, it doesn't apply. Well,
I don't want to read all those laws, though. That's a lot of work.
Right. In the same breath, Rob made a reference to the Wild Wild West. I commented about this perpetuation of the myth of widespread gun violence in the Wild Wild West back in response to what he said in Episode 7. Ooh. Wow. He's going back to the archives there. And then he provides a link to a story dispelling the myth of the Wild West. And so I'll include that in the show notes.
I'll still be perpetuating that myth.
I think it's worthwhile to point out at least item two there in his Wild Wild West, that it happens in the movies. Item two being large cities, particularly those with the most onerous victim disarmament edicts, have the stereotypical Wild Wild West events. Point being, people have guns. Data show that you have a decrease in violence.
Yeah, and I mean, just logically thinking about it, if I'm a criminal, I'm going to mug somebody on the street, I'm going to do that in an area where I feel relatively confident that they are not going to draw a gun on me and hurt
them yes.
in response. So if I can set up shop in a city or a state where carrying guns concealed is illegal, it makes sense that's going to happen more often in those areas than it is in areas where the victims might be armed.
There was a city.
What'd you say, Rob?
I was just saying, dovetailing nicely with the Trayvon Martin situation. I think when George Zimmerman's walking around packing heat, I think he wasn't expecting to run into anybody who would give him any trouble. You know.
Yeah.
I don't think he was thinking, "Oh, I'll have a gun battle." He's like, "Oh yeah, this will be fine because I have this."
Right.
No one else, you know.
I haven't read, I don't think, any coverage about whether he was carrying concealed or not. Did you guys read that anywhere?
Mm-mm. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, and I'm not that makes that big a difference, but, you know, it's possible. I guess if if Trayvon Martin had gotten it into his head that he was going to do something, he might have thought twice if he had seen the gun on his hip, but not knowing he was carrying it.
Right.
I was,
I'm sure we'll find out in the trial.
Yeah. So, what, Jeremy, finish your thought about...
Oh, well, there was a... I don't remember the name of the city or town. I think it's in... Or it was in Georgia, where they actually passed a law requiring their citizens to own a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And crime went down. Yeah. Well, that's one of the guys that were... He was the one telling me about it. He's a big gun freak, and not saying that's necessarily the way to go. Larger cities, it's not really.
I apologize to all our listeners who are gun freaks.
As long as you're not a big gun freak.
I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying he reads about this stuff all the time. He knows a lot about it, and he talks a lot about it.
Yeah, is he kind of twitchy?
No. Well, he's a little bit high strung, I would say. Yeah. But I don't.
Neighborhood watch captain by any chance?
He is not. He's probably one of the least observant people. he's too focused. He's not good at stuff like that.
Okay.
But no, I didn't. And I'm not going to apologize for saying gun freak. You're not going to force me into an apology, Jerry. Because I didn't mean it in a derogatory sense.
Coon.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that's all the listener feedback we've got to cover. I'm going to end the show here with a clip from this weekend's Saturday Night Live. They opened with a skit, Mitt Romney pandering to various groups all across the country. It was pretty funny. Jeremy told me about it today, so I went and found it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
So I got a link in the show notes to that. You guys got anything else?
NASA astronauts came out saying they are disappointed in NASA for endorsing climate change.
Okay.
Silly astronauts.
Kind of an interesting article, I thought.
That's pretty interesting about astronauts, you know, coming out against their employer. It's a pretty bold move.
This was, well, I don't know that it'd be more like former employer, because it was some of the retired astronauts. Oh. I don't know. I didn't see the whole list of which astronauts signed on to this letter, but there was a non-trivial number, and plus some scientists, and all they were saying was, you know, we don't support this position that you're calling this. This essentially case closed,
right?
And when there's plenty of it's really still up in the air, and you know, NASA is a world class organization of science and should respect that by respecting the science, not just deciding that climate change is in effect man made climate change.
Okay.
I'm just gonna leave that for now.
Let's leave that right there.
Hey, we've talked about it before. We're going to talk about it again. You asked if there's anything else.
Okay, well, I threw a few links there in the reading room for our listeners to check out. One of them is kind of disturbing about the levels of arsenic and other chemicals that have been found in chicken meat here in the United States. So you might want to check that out.
Arsenic.
Wait, didn't Dr. Oz just say that about apple cider or something, or apple juice?
Who the hell watches Dr. Oz?
Yeah.
I don't, but it was a big...
To-do. Jeremy does!
Was that on Drudge, too?
No, it may have made it, I don't know. But no, there was backlash. I don't remember if it was arsenic or what it was, but there was something about apple juice, and he was saying, oh, you shouldn't be having your kids drink this. It's bad for them. And turned out it was kind of much ado about nothing.
Okay.
Just trying to get ratings, I guess.
Got another link in the reading room there to interesting story about town in Spain that is considering paying off its debt by letting local farmers grow pot.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. That's entrepreneurial right there.
Yeah. Got to do what you got to do. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will hopefully hear from you soon. Leave us some feedback. Send us an email, Facebook, Twitter. We're everywhere. Find us. We will see you next week.
Good night.
Bye now.
Next on C-SPAN, Road to the White House. Following his primary victories last Tuesday in Wisconsin, Maryland, and Washington, D.C., Republican frontrunner Mitt Romney made campaign stops in a dozen cities across the country, where he claimed to be interested in things we know he is not interested in. His first appearance on Wednesday was before the Pittsburgh Trade Association.
Of course, you know, growing up in Michigan, I've always been an enormous fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, what a team. What a football team. I mean, with those uniforms they had of different colors and, of course, you know, the great coach and the various players who were all so terrific. You know, I could name them all. Yeah. Now, in baseball, on the other hand, I rooted for the Pirates. Oh, Jiminy Cricket. What a ball club. All those players hitting and catching the ball. Yeah, and how about those Pittsburgh Penguins, huh?
We don't believe you!
Okay, all right, okay.
Later that day, Mitt Romney spoke before a meeting of the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, or ASPCA.
In politics, we're often told that sometimes we simply have to compromise. But let me tell you, here and now, there is one issue on which I will never back down. Never cut a deal. Never compromise, because it's the core of who I am. Cat spaying. It's simply the right thing to do. And quite frankly, the reason I got into this race. I want to be known as the cat neutering president.
Thursday morning, Governor Romney was in East St. Louis, Illinois, where he spoke to the local Chamber of Commerce.
You know, Ann and I have lived and traveled all over the world, but I'll let you in on a little secret. The only place that has ever truly felt like home is right here, East St. Louis, Illinois.
Are you crazy? This is a hellhole.
Really? I find it to be such a lovely place.
Trust me, I'm the mayor. This place is a hellhole. We live in a hellhole.
Yeah. We hate it here.
Okay, all right.
That afternoon, Governor and Mrs. Romney were in Oklahoma, where they met with the Kiamichi Country Sportsmen's Association.
You know, unfortunately, with our schedules, Ann and I don't get to nearly as many cockfights as we'd like. But let me tell you, cockfighting has brought us more sheer enjoyment in our marriage than anything we have ever experienced. And that's why, frankly, I want to be the cockfighting president.
Thursday evening, Governor Romney stopped in Dallas to address the National Convention of the Role-Playing Game Association.
You know, in all honesty, I can't remember a time when Dungeons and Dragons wasn't an important part of my life.
We don't believe you!
Okay, all right, okay.
Friday morning, Governor Romney was in Chicago, where he spoke at a meeting of the American Diabetes Association.
Of course, no one wants to get sick, you know, but frankly, I've always thought that if I had to develop a chronic disease, you know, I hoped it would be adult onset diabetes. I mean, what a fascinating illness, you know, when you think about it.
Later, Governor Romney made an appearance at the 2012 Piercing Convention.
when people ask me, Mitt, just how many piercings do you have? Well, I always say more than I need, but less than I want. Now, besides the two nipple rings, which I've already spoken about, you know, and the taint, I've recently added a barbell tongue stud, which Ann and I both enjoy very much.
That afternoon, before the start of Passover, Governor Romney appeared at a meeting of the United Jewish Appeal.
Barak, Atah, Adonai.
We don't believe you!
All right, okay, all right.
Finally, on Saturday, Governor Romney was in New York, where he appeared in the opening of Saturday Night Live.
You know, I've just got to tell you, quite frankly, it's a thrill to be here on Saturday Night Live. It's my favorite show, all the wonderful comic skits and send-ups and japes over the years. You know, it's really something. And of course, there's that unforgettable opening we all know oh so well. Hey, New York, let's start the show.
New York, it's Saturday night!
Yeah, exactly what he said. That's right.